Hello and welcome to Nice News. This is a broadcast about some very interesting topics. I'm Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. On Nice News, we cover information that comes from all parts of the world, and the topics are varied. The program provides a timeout from the daily news that doesn't always cover the happiest topics. So please give us a listen. Who knows what might give you a laugh or cause you to remember something from another era or might even pique your interest, like this issue on trailgating at the Nordic Super Bowl. The article is written by Nat Herz. American sports fans know tailgating, showing up at the stadium a few hours early to party in the parking lot, but that pales in comparison to what you might call trailgating in Norway. That's where skiing is the top sport. The cross-country World Ski Championships just wrapped up there, and some fans made it a month. John Hammernes, wanting to be sure to get a good spot to watch the championships in the forest near the central Norwegian city of Trondheim, showed up early. "We set up the tent 3 weeks ago," he said, "frying bacon over hot coals, sitting on reindeer and sheepskins, next to the 30 bags of firewood that he hauled in from a parking lot. We have also a fireplace inside the tent, so it's nice and cozy," Hammernes said. "You can sit in a t-shirt." Organizers say as many as 20,000 fans are in the woods to watch the national heroes glide past and try to conquer the rival Swedes. That's on top of another 30,000 filling the nearby stadium. Think American football, hot dog vendors, huge video boards, but replace the gridiron with a ski trail that winds out and up into the forest. "You know, all the Norwegians are born with the skis," said fan Ragnar Hoas, who the traditional Norwegian heritage is to go skiing. "We like to see our athletes. Of course, we are very happy when they are winning, but of course we allow the Swedish neighbors to win sometimes." There was a lot of Norwegian fans to be happy about, as their standout star Johannes Klebo won all six world championship races. On the women's side, though, Swedish skiers took all the gold medals. American Jessie Diggins, the top-ranked female skier in the world coming into the championships, made the podium as well, winning a silver in the team sprint with teammate Julia Kern. But she struggled in other events, including the grueling 50-kilometer final race on Sunday. "I had to keep believing in myself and believing in my body and taking care of my body and knowing that it will come," Diggins said early in the competition. "We will nail it, all the skis, the wax, the glide, my body, it will all come together on the right day. And I had to keep that faith. But that does not come easily. It's work. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that." Julie Kern is one of the few top U.S. prospects who are coming into their own just in time for next year's Olympics in Italy. Kern was also involved in a big off-trail story. These races score big TV ratings in Europe, and climate campaigners were threatening to disrupt them over oil company sponsorship. But Kern and another American, Alaskan Gus Schumacher, led international athletes in negotiations that prompted the group to stand down. The agreement says that athletes will work with the campaigners to phase out fossil fuel sponsorship of major international ski events and to prioritize advertising deals with companies that commit to climate leadership and the long-term future of winter sport. "It's kind of easy to be in your house when you don't feel a lot of the changes, but we're at Fairbanks latitude in Norway, and it's 50 degrees and it's barely March, you know? And like Anchorage is out of snow, which sucks," Schumacher said, nodding at the warm, rainy conditions that make ski racing pretty tough at times. "Those are small problems in the full Earth climate issue, but it's where we see it," said Schumacher. Kern says that rainy, sloppy conditions in Trondheim underscored the importance of climate work, but the weather barely dampened the enthusiasm of the Norwegian crowd. This article written by Nat Herz, Trail Gating at the Nordic Super Bowl. Rebecca Brandis writes, "You don't have to change. Gretchen Rubin shares 4 practical lessons for leading a happier life. Happiness is hard to characterize. Is it a contentment? Is it satisfaction? Joy? Ask author Gretchen Rubin, who studies and writes about the subject, and she won't miss a beat in answering. I do not define it, Rubin told Nice News matter-of-factly. I started my career in law, where we spent an entire semester arguing about contracts, and happiness is an even more elusive concept. She noted that there are some 15 academic definitions of the term and added, we can all bring to it what we want. I think for the ordinary person, it's more helpful to think about being happier, she explained. If you do this, this week, this month, this year, are you likely to be happier? However, you define that for yourself. Host of the podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, the Yale graduate published the New York Times best-selling book Happiness Project in 2018. And then she went on to create a newsletter and an award-winning app on the topic. Her ideas about human behavior are rooted in research, and as she puts it, me search. Read on for some of her practical advice. And that's just what we're doing. Get to know thyself. It's a natural for people to judge themselves and others based on one-size-fits-all perception of how progress is made. But Rubin is adamant that we should resist beating ourselves up if we fail at adopting certain habits or behaviors we think will make us happier, because everyone is different. This is my thing. I'm always like, you don't have to change. There's nothing wrong with you, Rubin emphasized. You just have to set yourself up for success by taking yourself into account. And so it's not about what's wrong with me. Why can't other people do it? I'm not a real adult. I'm lazy. I'm self-sabotaging. I can't make myself a priority. Everybody can get to the top of the mountain, but we have to take different roads to get there. And to understand which road to take, you have to first understand what kind of driver you are, so to speak. Are you a night owl who feels most energetic later in the evening? Well, that's great. Embrace it. And maybe don't set a goal of waking up every day at 5 a.m. to work out. You really need to stop and think things like, what kind of person am I? When I have succeeded in the past, what did I do? When I have failed in the past, what do I need to do? She explained. Much to our delight, Rubin loves a good quiz for encouraging self-knowledge on the context of life improvement. She's designed 3 particular tests that may come in handy. One is based on personality framework, which she calls the 4 tendencies, 4 distinct modes in which we respond to expectations. Knowing yours can help you understand why you react to certain situations the way you do and thus make it easier for you to achieve your goals. Another is the Habits for Success quiz, designed to identify the habit that will provide the biggest boost to happiness. And the 5 senses quiz aims to familiarize people with the most neglected sense so they can cultivate more experiences in that realm and lead a richer life. Strategize. Once you have a good grasp of how you operate, you'll want to translate it to the abstract into the actionable strategies. As we've previously reported, 43% of all human behavior is habitual, so it stands to reason that developing positive habits is a good approach for leading a happier life. Rubin has identified numerous strategies, 21 to be exact, and these strategies are for success. One of the most helpful on the list concerns convenience. To a kind of bananas degree, we're much more likely to do something if it's even slightly more convenient and much less likely to do something if it's even slightly less convenient, she pointed out. For example, if you're wanting to check your phone less often, put it in another room and not the back pocket of your jeans. If you're dead set on getting to the gym 3 times a week, buy a membership to the one that's closest to your home. Once you've identified something as a really high-value activity for happiness, if you can afford it, it's worth spending a bit of more money to make it a bit more convenient. Another she recommends is the strategy of pairing. or combining the activity you're trying to make a habit with something you either really love or absolutely have to do. If you have a favorite podcast, you can only listen to that podcast when you're walking. You can't listen to it when you're unloading the dishwasher. You can't do it while you're getting ready in the morning. You have to be out for a walk to listen to that favorite podcast. It's not a reward. They just go together. A favorite of this writer's is what Rubin refers to as loophole spotting, essentially recognizing the various types of cognitive dissonance we invoke to rationalize our choices so we're equipped to guard against them. Tweak your vocabulary. Words do matter. This is true for the language a society uses to refer to people and states of being, like disabilities or mental health disorders. And it is likewise true for how we speak to ourselves. One thing that has surprised me is how much people are affected by vocabulary. Rubin shared, to illustrate her point, she said, "Do you practice piano or do you play piano?" Think about the language that appeals to you, she went on. Let's say there's a room in your house. Is it a study? Is it an office? Is it a library? Is it a studio? That will shape how you think about it. The idea applies not just to simple terminology, but also to the metaphors we make use of. Finding what resonates most for you can help inspire action or reframe events. Rubin did this with a recent experience, her younger daughter leaving for college. I don't like the idea of an empty nest, so I'm reframing it as the open door stage, she explained. In a piece for The Atlantic, she elaborated, adults whose kids have left home deserve a metaphor that emphasizes possibilities. Prioritize relationships. Lastly, if there's one area we should all devote attention to in pursuit of happier lives, it's our relationships. If you're talking about happiness, ancient philosophers and contemporary scientists agree that a key element to a happy life is a strong relationship with other people. Think about ways to either broaden our relationships or deepen our existing relationships, and it's really likely to boost our happiness, Rubin said, adding, it's a really, really high priority. Many of us are already acutely aware of the fact, of course, but actually putting it into practice can prove challenging. Where do you start? How do you deepen those relationships? On her website, Rubin offers a long list of steps that you can take to turn acquaintances into friendships and to make new ones. One of her suggestions is to confide a secret. Trust is an important marker for a friendship. Another is to do regular activities like walking the dog or going to the gym at the same time every day, so you see the same people and form relationships with them. This article, written by Rebecca Brandis, You Don't Have to Change. Gretchen Rubin shares 4 practical lessons for leading a happier life. Our next article is from Corpus Christi, Texas, and it's titled, The Scientists Trying to Save the Fewer Than 100 Wild Ocelots in the United States. Mila, the 5-year-old ocelot, is undergoing a procedure that scientists hope will help save her species in the United States. Ocelots once roamed the southwestern United States. Just look at that cat. I mean, why would you not want that animal to survive in nature, said Swanson. Scientists say fertility treatments could be the key to saving them and kickstarting a new generation of wild cats. The procedure Mila is going through is in vitro fertilization. Her eggs are fertilized with semen from a male ocelot in a petri dish to be developed into an embryo in an incubator. Dr. Bill Swanson from the Cincinnati Zoo talks about this procedure. The work we've been doing on this trip would produce some embryos with frozen ocelot sperm from a wild male. And that'd be the first time we're basically able to cross a wild ocelot with one in a zoo population. But that's part of the process that we have to build up the managed population in the breeding facility that we can rewild and put back into nature. Swanson has been working with the nonprofit East Foundation to breed ocelots. But of the 13 artificial inseminations and 4 in vitro fertilization procedures in recent years, none have produced a viable pregnancy, including Mila's. So we're seeing an egg from Mila from her procedure, and we're hopeful that it was fertilized and cleaved, but it did not. That's Dr. Ashley Reeves, a research veterinarian with the East Foundation. The organization manages one of 2 small breeding populations in South Texas for ocelots. Ashley Reeves is a research veterinarian in East Foundation. I mean, yeah, it is disappointing, but at the same time, science doesn't always go the way you expect it to go. Swanson points to the decreased quality of wild ocelot sperm due to inbreeding, environmental stress, and decreased motility from freezing specimens for preservation. On top of that, ocelots have a much lower reproductive rate than domestic cats. An ocelot usually has 1 kitten. That's the normal litter size, is a single kitten. And in the wild, the mother will raise that kitten for a full year until it's old enough to go out on its own. Reeves and Swanson say that with each fertility effort, they gain more knowledge towards successfully breeding wild cats. Their team will spend the next few months trapping wild male ocelots to collect their sperm while resuming fertility procedures in the fall. And Swanson says it's not just saving the ocelot, it's saving the habitat and the ecosystem where it lives, which supports so many other animals and that provide those services that let people survive on this planet. This article about ocelots comes from Corpus Christi, Texas, and is titled, "The Scientists Trying to Save the Fewer Than 100 Wild Ocelots in the United States." Well, now we move on to bikes, which is not an easy transition from ocelots to bikes, but here goes. Earn a Bike program gives San Diego homeless their own ride after 100 miles. Every Thursday morning in downtown San Diego, Deacon John Roberts leads a cycling club through Father Joe's Villages, a homeless shelter and nonprofit. The program has been operational for the last 10 years, and Roberts credits it with helping unhoused community members improve their mental and physical health while gaining crucial independence. Once a week, riders embark on a 20-mile ride through San Diego. Participants don't need a bike of their own, as cycles are donated throughout the nonprofit. When a rider completes their first 100 miles, they are gifted a new or gently used bike to keep. If they continue to ride for 100 miles more, they get a 1-month transit pass. With a bicycle and a transit pass, one has all of San Diego County to explore, Roberts told Good, Good, Good. For some, it allows them a wider job search area. For others, it allows them to explore all that San Diego has to offer. For all, it broadens their horizons and produces a boost in the health of mind, body, and spirit, and a new mobility. Since 2015, Roberts has led an estimated 250 individuals on rides. From 2015 to 2020, however, only about 40 participated, and they did not keep mileage records. In 2020, Roberts began the Earn a Bike incentive, and interest increased exponentially. In the last 5 years, 220 individuals have ridden a combined total of 21,600 miles. Roberts added, and 76 of those participants have been awarded bicycles. When participants complete 100 miles with us, they are awarded their bike, a helmet, a lock, lights, and a saddlebag with some maintenance items, he said. Many have gone on to use the bike as a virtual and vital transportation resource, even if they were novices. One time, after we had ridden a couple of miles through the city, a lady almost careened into a pole. When I asked what happened, she said she didn't know how much she could turn the bike without falling over, Robert said. After a little more inquiry, I learned that she had never ridden a bicycle before. She loved riding. She went on to earn her bike in short order, got a job, and moved on. Robert said confidence is often the hardest resource for participants to find. Many people are excited by the prospect of going for a bike ride, and even more so by the possibility of earning their own bike, but they are not confident in their ability to complete a 20-mile ride. As is usually the case, however, he said folks are often elated to have completed the challenge when the ride is over. For most, their enthusiasm only grows with increased participation. For those who don't continue it, it is more likely a change of circumstance that prevents them from continuing than a lack of desire. In addition to the cycling itself, folks in the program also learn about bicycle safety and how to maintain their bikes. Through participation with the San Diego County Bike Coalition and Rebike San Diego, the group offers free bicycle maintenance workshops and some small repairs. The group has also partnered with PayDAC Racing Team to encourage participation in the sport of cycling overall. Together, we encourage the development of riders and especially the young and underserved populations. They support our operation by providing volunteers to lead rides, repair bikes, and provide cycling safety and maintenance classes. After a decade of this work, one thing is very clear. The community, what propels Roberts and his unhoused riding club forward. Every day we ride is a good and joyful day, he said, and it makes for a very good memory. This article, Earn a Bike Program, gives San Diego homeless their own ride after 100 miles. Beatrice Dupuy writes, One Cat's Incredible Reunion with its owner after the L.A. wildfires. It appears the tall tale that all cats have nine lives may be true for a California Maine Coon named Aggie. The beloved feline was feared dead for 2 months after the Palisades wildfire in Los Angeles, which left her family's home in ashes. But the owner, 82-year-old Catherine Kiefer, held out hope. Over the weekend, Kiefer got a call from the West Los Angeles Animal Shelter. Her daughter, Caroline Kiefer, shared the reunion Saturday in a TikTok video that quickly garnered more than 1 million likes. It shows tears pouring from Catherine Kiefer's eyes as Aggie curled up in her arms. I was very much worried that I was going to wake up and discover it had been a dream, she said. Kiefer was at a medical appointment the day fire engulfed her neighborhood and her children couldn't find Aggie, who was prone to hiding when they tried to rescue her. One thing my mom asked was, Did you get Aggie? Carolyn recalls. Many pet owners struggled to reach their domesticated animals during the frantic rush to evacuate from the Palisades wildfire in January. Aggie, who was about 5 years old, was gifted to Catherine Kiefer by a friend during the COVID-19 pandemic. Social media users have been so touched by the pair's reunion video that many have been asking for daily updates. The family's $30,000 GoFundMe campaign for Aggie's vet bills has topped $21,000. The cat has undergone several blood transfusions and is now seeing a specialist. She was basically skin and bone and in a state of absolute starvation, Carolyn said. The family will officially be reunited with Aggie when she's released from the hospital. Kiefer said she's anxiously awaiting and she has a message for other pet owners. Don't underestimate cats, she said. This article, One Cat's Incredible Reunion with its Owner After the L.A. Wildfires, was written by Beatrice Dupuy. And here is the thought for today, and it is from Ludwig von Beethoven. Music is a higher revelation than all wisdom and philosophy. In a letter to German poet and statesman Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, German writer Bettina von Arnim quoted this line first spoken by her friend Ludwig von Beethoven, whose musical ability had by that point, the early 1800s, taken Europe by storm. In the view of the virtuoso, the unspeakable quality of music to uncover deep emotion and understanding surpasses that of any works by sages and philosophers. For Beethoven to hear and be moved by a musical composition is to experience the highest intellectual state. As Beethoven said, music is a higher revelation than all wisdom and philosophy. Well, we're now at the conclusion of Nice News. I hope you enjoyed the articles today. Please join us again next time when we cover very interesting topics and very interesting stories on Nice News. This has been Joyce Vesper, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well. Be happy. Bye-bye.